The shelter in place produced by the COVID-19 pandemic is not a vacation. Vacations usually mean you go places and leave your cares behind. Our almost house arrest keeps us close to home with a new set of issues to deal with, and those can include what to do with that time. How about art? Even if you think you don't possess a lot of artistic talent, there are lots of activities that classify as art. We get an introduction to just how broad a field from Sarah Urist Green, who is the author of You Are an Artist, subtitled Assignments to Spark Creation. Sarah is an art educator and curator and creator of The Art Assignment, a PBS series about art history, which she hosts. Sarah is also a former curator of contemporary art at the Indianapolis Museum of Art, so you know she lives in Indiana. Sarah, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much for having me.
Is the book something of an extension of the TV show?
Yes. It's actually a web series. So it's available anytime for free on YouTube, and it's called The Art Assignment. And it's really sort of how I started gathering these assignments from artists working all around the country. I'd visit them and ask them to come up with a prompt for making art that relates to the way that they work.
It's really interesting. So we get to see some of their art either online or on TV or in the book, and then get a chance to try the same techniques, essentially.
That's correct. Yeah. And my hope is that by sort of trying on the way somebody else makes art, you might sort of discover that you really like one of those ways, or that leads you to something entirely different. But yeah, I really wanted to demonstrate that there are so many different ways of creating art, way beyond traditional things like painting, sculpture, drawing. You do not have to know how to draw to make art.
You start with the perception and an early art teacher that you had, I guess in Alabama, who showed you how differently people see the world. Tell us about that.
Yeah. When I was young, I sort of lucked into this art class workshop with the artist Lonnie Holly, who's sort of a self-taught artist. And at the time, you know, I was in school, and usually when you're in school, they give you very specific art assignments where, you know, you glue a cotton ball onto a paper to make a bunny tail or something like that. But with Lonnie, he gave us like a little chunk of sandstone and asked us to carve it. And he really sort of opened up the way that I sort of thought about art and considered that it was something that I could do and that I didn't need any skills that I didn't already possess. So it really stuck with me. And then I invited him to create an assignment for the book, which is to take a wire coat hanger from your closet or wherever you might stash them and unbend it and then rebend it into a self-portrait and hang it from the wall and take a photo of the shadow it casts. So he has stuck with me sort of throughout my formative years and to today.
That's one of the more enjoyable parts of the book, I found, is that it's usually got a bit of a twist there. So it's not like bend the hanger just into the self-portrait of yourself, but then see that the shadow's cast by it, take a picture of that. So there's always a few extra steps there that make it a more interesting assignment.
Yeah. I work with them to try to push people. Start with something comfortable. Start with something sort of easier, and then like push it in a new direction. Because what I've noticed about a lot of the artists that I work with, they're really good at paying attention to the world around them and noticing all these things. Like, you know, you might make a portrait out of a piece of wire or coat hanger, but did you notice the shadow it casts? And once you start noticing those things, you start noticing other things about your space, the way it sounds, the way it looks, the way it smells, and just sort of awakens you a little bit to what's already around you.
It reminds me of the fact that things that we, you know, that when you're growing up, it's like, well, you know, art, that's like painting and sculpture and stuff, but it can really be just manipulating perceptions. And I remember seeing a display that still stuck with me years ago, I think at the Portland Art Museum, where the surfaces in the wall were manipulated, and through the use of light, things that, you know, if you looked at the wall with the light straight on, it would have been just bumps in the wall, but with the light coming from a very sharp angle, it formed silhouettes, human silhouettes.
Right. Yeah, that sounds like an amazing artwork that I would like to see if I can ever leave the house again. I mean, some of them, like there's one assignment in the book by an artist named Lauren Zoll, and it's called Off. And it's to take a picture of a screen that is off, which sounds very odd, I know. But when you try this exercise, you notice that all these screens in your life that you think when they're off, they don't contain any information. They're actually reflecting the world around you. And if you go do this exercise of trying to take a picture of them, you realize that they're really sort of a window of sorts. And now I see it all the time. So when I'll go into a room, I'll sort of register that the television is there and that it's off. But I'll be like, oh, wow, but look, I can see the window behind it. I can see the dust and maybe scratches on it that's reflecting light in a beautiful way. So for me, these exercises are not just a way to sort of make a product or make something. It's really to just awaken your senses.
Which is really important. I mean, we've talked to neuroscientists who say that about 90% of what we think we're seeing is stuff that our mind just sort of creates because it's like, well, this is what I'm used to seeing, therefore. So when you get a chance to look at things from a different angle or like look at a screen that's off and see what you see in it, this really challenges you to look at things with fresh eyes.
That's right. That's right. And there's a lot of sound, or not a lot, but a fair number of sound-based exercises in the book. Like there's one called Find Your Band that experimental musicians from the New York-based group Bang on a Can came up with. And they ask you to listen to the sounds that populate your normal world throughout your day and pick one of those sounds that sort of calls to you and then have that sound become your band. And the example that the musician Mark Stewart came up with is he was at a block party in somebody's backyard and a car alarm kept going off. And everybody was getting annoyed, but then somebody, his wife, improvised a dance to it. And sort of took this sound and rectified it, made it from something annoying into something joyous.
All right, we have more to talk about, much more to talk about with Sarah Urist Green. There's no way we're going to get through the whole book. It's called You Are an Artist, Assignments to Spark Creation. We're back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 10. And Sarah, I wonder if you're hearing from people who are working on art projects more now that we're hunkering down at home, most of us.
I am indeed. I mean, I usually do hear from people who are responding to some of our video-based assignments. But now, you know, I never would have predicted that this book release would align with COVID-19 and this terrible things that are happening in the world. But a silver lining is that a lot of people are making things. And it's been really wonderful and rewarding to see all the amazing things that people are doing while they're stuck inside their homes.
We have an email here from Napoleon who got this in before the show even started. He said, I always thought that's what Andy Warhol was getting at with his attitude toward the art world, somewhat bemused by the notion that anything can be treated as art by the powers that be in the art world. Therefore, why shouldn't all things be treated as art and therefore all creative people artists? I mean, the guy painted a soup can for crying out loud, that from Napoleon in Klamath County. So give some encouragement here to the people then who say, I'm no good at art.
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it is just the way you look at it. And a lot of these activities in the book, you don't even have to think of them as being art if that's intimidating to you or even turns you off. I know there's a lot that's alienating about the art world. But, I mean, one of the tasks in the book is to take a walk and instead of going toward a particular destination, try to find the quietest place you can.
Which and Jace Clayton does, right?
Yes, that's right. And then once you're there, you take a sound recording or you make a video or you write down some notes. And you can kind of adapt these to whatever your natural inclinations are. So if you like to write, do that activity and then write something about your experience. If you like to make claymation animations, maybe you make a claymation animation based on that. So the idea is to work with what you've got and do small things that can make your life a little bit more meaningful and fulfilling.
Well, we have a phone call already, too. Let's talk to Misha in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sarah Urist Green.
It's an interesting program. I myself, for the longest time, I wasn't really doing art stuff. I was concentrating on music. But when I went to Mecca and got some glossy paper, and when I got some markers at the University of Oregon bookstore, something changed. And now I've been doing lots of design, like pictures and stuff, and now it's something I feel compelled to do. So all these years, something I didn't really do, but now it's something I really enjoy doing. The only thing now I'm doing this, and I'm also doing music. So, but the thing is, people have so much creativity. I mean, there's so much art is such a wide thing. So like what you're talking about, there's so much latitude. There's so much things people could do. So people can be kind of free to do things, to be creative, because so many things in life, it's not the way. It's people doing things one way.
Indeed. So thanks for bringing that up, Misha. And that is a really major point of the book, Sarah. It's a wide thing how art is defined here. And as we just mentioned with even sound things. Now, let's come back to Jace Clayton. Let's talk about, because he goes well beyond the visual arts.
Yeah. I mean, I think that Misha made a great point because, you know, a lot of us when we're kids are unafraid of making art. Mm-hmm. And are actually, like, when I was a curator at an art museum, I focused on contemporary art, and I noticed that children never had a problem with what they saw in the modern and contemporary art galleries. It was mostly adults and people when they got older who would say, like, oh, this isn't art, or this, I don't, you know, this isn't what art is supposed to be. But children were open to that. And children are also, like, more open to experimenting with their own art. And I think whatever we can do to sort of remember that and, like, enliven that kind of experimentation as you know, older children and adults is a good thing.
And I like the urging in the order of events here. You start with Kim Beck, who really says, look at things differently. And in her case, you know, look down.
That's right. Yeah. Kim Beck is a Pittsburgh-based artist. And she is always looking at the ground. She really is curious about weeds and cracks in the sidewalk and sort of our built environment contrasting with our natural environment. And she asks you, she calls them surface tests, but what they really are is a rubbing of the ground beneath your feet. So she asks you to either inside your house if you can't get out or nearby your house if you can go for a walk, record a piece of ground near where you live, and then take a photo of that rubbing in place. And, you know, this is also something you could do as an exchange with someone. I think especially during this time, we need to figure out novel ways to connect. And, you know, maybe you take a surface test near your house and you take a picture of it and you send it to a friend who might live far away or near, but you can't see them, and ask them to do it too and send theirs to you.
This could be fun. You could do it like, wait a minute, what is that? What did you do that rubbing on?
Yeah. Where are you? Yeah. So I think, you know, there are a number of activities in the book that have you interviewing friends or family members, and that's something that you can most definitely do during this time.
Sarah Urist Green is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is You Are an Artist, Assignments to Spark Creation. So not just looking around you, but also looking inward. Let's talk about, for example, T.J. Dedeaux-Norris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. T.J.'s assignment is called Become Someone Else. And they ask you to take a selfie and then change one thing about yourself, whether that's putting on a wig, changing your clothes, speaking in a lower voice, changing the way you walk, then to go out into the world or, you know, stay home if you must, and then take a second selfie as this sort of new persona. And it really asks you to sort of think about how you present yourself, how you self-identify, and what are the things that we do that adapt that. So that's a really wonderful exercise that we've had some amazing responses to.
The idea, too, of letting materials of art speak for themselves, not forcing them into a shape or onto a canvas or something. I'm probably going to slaughter the name here, but Sophie Peach?
Oh, yeah, Sophie Peach? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so his assignment is called Imprint. And, you know, he grew up in Cambodia and then studied art in the U.S., And when he did that, he learned to paint in a sort of traditional way. But then he went back home to Cambodia, and he couldn't find the same materials that he would use when he was studying in Chicago. So he started working instead with rattan and bamboo, which were readily available in Cambodia, and he started bending them into shapes and forms. And I think a key lesson of that is that, you know, you may not have what you think you need to make art, but in the process, you might discover something you like working with even more by just sort of looking around or working with the contents of your recycling bin. And his assignment is actually to take an object you find interesting, cut it in half, dip it in some sort of a paint or dye that you can wrestle up or find, even house paint will work, and then press it repeatedly to a piece of paper to make a pattern or design.
So that's a really good point there, right there, though, that you mentioned that it could just be house paint. I mean, don't get hung up on the idea like, well, that's not for artwork, that thing there. I mean, anything can be for artwork.
Oh, no, lots of artists use, you know, gloppy old house paint. There's still things you can do with it. So I think if you broaden your perspective of what can be art materials, all of a sudden you think you don't have what you need, but you do. And even another assignment in the book is called Find Your Studio. And it's about identifying the kind of place in your home or in your life or even in your mindset that's your ideal workspace. So some of them are about getting ready to work.
Our guest is Sarah Urist-Green, who is the creator and host of PBS's The Art Assignment, which is segments are available online, but it's in book form now. It's called You Are an Artist, Assignments to Spark Creation. You can join our conversation, compare notes on artwork you've done in the past or things you're thinking of doing, or ask some questions about what you're hearing from Sarah right now at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. There's a hashtag you provide here that goes along with the book title, hashtag You Are an Artist. What would you like people to do with that?
I would love for people to respond to some of the assignments and then post what they make with that hashtag to Instagram, Twitter. We also have a Facebook group. And that way I can see them and I can also share them with our audience.
All right. Now, we talked about the stuff in the house, and you do give directions not to hurt yourself, which is always a good direction for any activity in or around the house. However, having said that, we also get to drawing or painting blindfolded, as Kim Dingle has done. What does the artist learn from this?
Yeah, well, I think I know the artist tried out this sort of on a dare. She had been making these paintings of angry little girls wearing frilly dresses, misbehaving in all these ways for a number of years. And the person who runs the gallery she shows in said, oh, you know, can you make some more of those paintings? And she said, oh, well, I could paint those with my eyes closed. And then she thought, you know what? I think I'm going to try that. And when she did, she found it to be a really instructive exercise. And so her assignment is to blindfold yourself and then to make a drawing or painting or using whatever tools you have around of your home. So you try that. And then you take off the blindfold and you make a drawing of your home not blindfolded, and then you compare the two. And I've done this a number of times, and 100% of the time, I much prefer my blindfolded drawing. Seriously, it's freer, and then you're sort of imagining the space in your head, and it actually feels more dimensional instead of thinking like, oh, my house is a square with a roof, mm-hmm. you know? And when you're thinking about it, you're like, oh, well, there's a walkway that goes here, and then I go up the stairs, and, you know. So you actually get many more interesting details with the blindfolded one.
Well, that's one of the delightful things about the processes in the book is that there's a real sense of being open to surprising yourself with your own artwork.
Yeah, I mean, especially at this time when a lot of people are at home alone or, you know, with the same people for a lot of the day, I think that whatever we can do to sort of wake ourselves up a little bit or reintroduce ourselves to our own interior life is really critical. I mean, it's important, I think, all the time, but especially now.
I love Kim Dingell's answer to a short question about her own process, but it could be really about anybody's, which is, what's the right mindset for trying this assignment?
Yeah, and what does she say? I don't want to misquote it. I don't have it.
I don't have it in front of me either, but it's along the lines of, like, as if you're about to skydive for the first time.
Yeah. And, you know, that's what artists tend to be really good at. And that's one reason why I really enjoy talking with artists and being around them, is because there's this sort of, like, vulnerability and willingness to fail. And they practice it. You know, they routinely put themselves out there and try new things. And from what I've observed, the more you do that, the more you play at it, the more you try new things through art assignments or cooking new recipes or whatever your interests are, you know, you get better at it and you get more comfortable saying, like, okay, I'm going to try this new thing today. And, you know, it may be a magnificent failure, but it doesn't matter. It's still going to be fun. Mm-hmm. It's still going to be enjoyable, even if what I make doesn't look great.
Now, with a lot of the really contemporary stuff in the book, the last thing I expected to see was the work of Albrecht Dürer, whose work always mystifies me in its quality. It also scares me a lot of the time, too, when he draws things like Night, Death, and the Devil. But he's been dead for 500 years. Why is he in this book?
Well, he's in this book because he made, so I included this picture of this rhinoceros that he drew in 1515, and a famous woodcut was made of it and it distributed all around. But it's a picture of a rhinoceros. And the interesting thing about it is that he never actually saw a rhinoceros. And it was before photography, so he couldn't have seen a photo of it. But somebody who did see it wrote a description of it and described parts of its body as being like plates of armor. So this rhinoceros that he drew is wonderfully detailed, but he never, ever saw it at all. And an artist, a New York-based artist named David Brooks, who I commissioned an assignment from for the book and the series, is called Never Seen, Never Will. And inspired by Dürer's drawing, he's asking you to think of something you know exists, but that you've never seen and probably won't see in your lifetime. And then you articulate that something in any medium you like. And by articulate, it means describe it in some way. So, you know, you could make a drawing, you could write about it, you could make a painting, you could make a digital collage on your phone. But, you know, people have done amazing things about, like, trying to visualize a black hole or a mental state or what the back of their own head looks like. So people have really taken this in wonderful directions, and all inspired by Albrecht Dürer, who made a drawing of a rhinoceros in 1515.
And you know, as with all of Dürer's work, rather, it was very, very detailed and fantastical in some ways. But wow, he got pretty close to actually what a rhinoceros does look like.
Yeah, he did. He did pretty well, actually.
After this part of the book, I just sort of skimmed ahead to things that caught my eye. And the next thing was the pictures generation. What's that about?
Well, one of the assignments in the book is called Caption Contest, and a Minneapolis-based artist created a painting and then asked, in his work, he will sort of make an image and then write some words over it. It's either a lyric or just a phrase they come up with or an imagined piece of dialogue that goes with it. But he created the image, and it's of two shoes, and then he asks you to write on top of it. And the book, throughout the book, I have these moments called History as Your Guide. And the one that you're referencing includes an image by Barbara Kruger, who's part of the Pictures Generation, who in the late 70s and early 80s were really starting to think a lot about how all the advertising imagery and television imagery we consume is affecting us. You know, with this assignment, you're really thinking about how when you take an image and you add text to it, you can really play with the meaning of it in a lot of different ways. And that's something that the Pictures Generation was really good at. And I take, because I'm trained as an art historian, I take any opportunity to sneak in art history whenever I can.
Lots of that through the book, but it's definitely in small doses. The book is a lot of fun. It's called You Are an Artist, Assignments to Spark Creation. It's the work of Sarah Urist Green, and we have her for a few more minutes on the other side of a break here on the Jefferson Exchange. As we head to that break, I'll remind you that we've been quietly conducting our spring fund drive, not at all in the usual way with two people sitting in a room interrupting programming and sometimes annoying our listeners, but at least bringing in the funding needed to keep the station going. So that didn't seem appropriate this time. We wanted to stick with programming and just open up the phone lines and the website for pledges. And boy, have they been coming in. We're over $91,000 thus far. And I have some recent thanks to give to Louise Dix in Gresham, Janet Moray in Grants Pass, Marion Spadone in Ashland, Tiffany Morrison in Medford, Tammy Ryan in Medford, Judy Whitney in Medford, and Linnell Diggs in Hornbrook. Thank you all for your pledges and for blazing a trail for the rest of us. This is Jefferson Public Radio. We're back in 1 minute. We had a drop-off call from John in Ashland who said, art is everywhere, even in accidents, like when one is using a drop cloth to paint houses.
Yeah, that is a great point. I mean, I often find that when I'm making something, like if I'm making a watercolor painting, I'll sort of fret over it for an hour, and then I look at sort of the blotting paper that I'm using to just sort of wipe my wipe my brush on a paper towel, and it's prettier than the painting. so you know, but I think that's also like, oh hey, well I made a pretty blotting paper, and it's not a total failure. Or I was making a paper weaving the other day with my kids, and that's another assignment in the book. And I made this paper weaving, and I worked on it for a long time. And then I flipped it over, and I was like, oh, the back is so much better than the front. and so, you know, I think that's, again, it's just sort of an attitude that if you don't prescribe the activity from the start and you see it more as being a process instead of completely oriented toward a finished product, it really opens you up to having a more positive experience.
You know, the paper weaving thing really struck me because it's one of those things where if you've gotten to that far back into the book and you're thinking, well, I can't paint, I can't draw, I can't do textiles. Wait a second, what's paper weaving?
Yeah. Well, the artist, Michelle Grabner, who is based between Milwaukee and Chicago, who proposed it as an art assignment for the book, almost 20 years ago, when she had a kindergartner, they came home from school carrying a paper weaving, and she thought, oh, that's cool. I'd like to do that. She was already a practicing artist and teacher, and she gave it a try, and she still makes a wide variety of work. She makes paintings, all sculpture, all different sorts of work, but again and again, she returns to paper weaving as a way of sort of thinking about pattern and color and design and composition. And so it's something she always does, and it's something she offers here because she says almost provocatively how important boredom is. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, and I know that sounds strange, but...
No, it doesn't. You know, in fact, if at this point in the book you say, bored, good. Boredom can be productive.
Yeah, because, I mean, I think once you're working on a lot of these activities... some of them involve introspection, but some of them involve sort of taking an idea, starting a weaving, and then seeing it through. And I don't know about you, but like during this time, sometimes I need something that's more automatic. You know, sometimes it's comforting. It's almost like knitting or something repetitive that you sort of figure it out. You set up your materials. And, you know, your materials for the paper weaving could be the contents of your recycling bin. It could be junk mail, you know, cut up into strips and woven together. So, you know, once you get going, I think for me, it can be a really relaxing, meditative exercise that I can do while listening to music, but just sort of a way to use your hands and get yourself out of your head a little bit.
Yeah, with just enough of a structured environment that you have to do things a certain way. And so, you know, there's not the whole broad field of like, hey, I could do, you know, you're just like, okay, do this in front of you.
Right. right, just do this thing.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And that's the point of these assignments is, you know, there are a lot of people who already know exactly how they want to make art. You know, they've sort of figured out that I like to do this. I like to paint still lifes of fruit. But most people don't know that. And I think even if you have sort of worked in a general direction for a long time, sometimes you need to mix it up. And that's what these assignments are for.
Let's take a phone call. Jamie in Medford, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange with Sarah Urist Green, the author of You Are an Artist.
Morning, Jeffrey and Sarah.
Hi.
Happy Earth Day.
Hi.
Happy Earth Day.
Well, a few random comments. First of all, Sarah, Durer, if I get his name right, people are doing what he did back then to this very day. They're called police sketch artists, and what they do is they make an image out of the description that the victim gives. And more often than not, they're pretty much accurate. And let's see, another one is, you would probably know this, Sarah, better than me. To paraphrase Picasso, he said something to the effect that art is lies that we do to find the truth.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty profound.
All right. Thanks for the thoughts, Jamie. Appreciate it. Oh, whoop, you got something else?
Oh, well.
You're on. Hello? Go ahead. Yeah, you're there.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Jeffrey, I'll finish with this. In the Middle Ages, bringing that period up to this very day, isolated monks sequestered somewhere created wonderful illuminations of the Bible, and those are considered, in effect, artworks to this very day.
Mm-hmm. Good
That's
point.
That's all I had to say.
Okay, sequestered people making artwork. Good point, Jamie.
Yeah. And I think the Picasso quote, art is a lie that tells the truth. Which is nice. I mean, he said it in French, so he would have said something else. But that's what it translates to. And I really like that because I think again it sort of frees you from thinking that art has to be like a direct photographic recording of the world around you. That it, you know, you and following your own inclinations can come up with something that is its own truth. And I love the police sketch artist comparison, because I know one of the people who responded to that Durer-inspired assignment to articulate something you've never seen and probably never will. Somebody drew, made a painting of their father, whom they'd never met or even seen a picture of, just sort of based on what they look like. And what their mother looked like. And they just sort of like tried to imagine what their dad might look like.
Which I found rather haunting. Maybe I wouldn't have felt that way without that caption. But here again, it was like, whoa, that's a rather profound picture. This is what I think my dad would have looked like. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's talk about things that the artists can actually do together. Of course, we have to make sure we're, you know, doing physical distancing here. But there's an exercise called a game of exquisite corpse, which is really interesting. How's that played?
So it's actually a game that the Surrealists first came up with, and they came up with it first as a poetry exercise, where one person writes a line of a poem, folds it over so that the next person can't see it, then passes it over, and they write the next line, fold it over. So, and then when you sort of go around and around with two or more people, then you unfold it, and all of a sudden you have this poem that you've made collaboratively. And one of the poems the Surrealists did that with included the line, the exquisite corpse will drink the new wine. So that's why they have it, that strange name. But you can make this a drawing game, too, where you create a drawing, fold it over so that the next person can only see a very sliver of it, sort of on the edge. And then they add to that, and they fold it over. And you can do that with the people with whom you share a home, or you could do it with a friend where you sort of start a drawing and then cover up all but a bit and send it to them. Or you can do it digitally, where you just kind of create a digital drawing or make a drawing and scan it, and then send somebody just a sliver and say, add on to it and send it back to me, and then you put it together. So I think, you know, there are lots of ways to be kind of clever within our current confines to make art with other people.
Mm-hmm. So when you're doing Exquisite Corpse, I mean, so does artist number three also get to see just the sliver that number two did, for example?
No, it's sort of adds on. So artist number three would only see a sliver of artist number two's drawing.
Okay, yeah. All right,
so I've actually done this with one of my children's classes, where, you know, we start at the top of a long roll of paper, and they, you know, they work on a bit, and then I cover up all but sort of one edge of their drawing, and another kid comes in and works on it, and then you cover up that bit, and so, and then when you reveal it, it's really fun and funny and strange, and it's this great drawing that no one ever could have made by themselves.
Yeah, it does sound like a lot of fun. I want to move on to the work of Genesis. Is it Bellanger or Bellanger?
Bellanger, yeah.
Okay, Bellanger. So she says, raid the fridge and rifle through drawers, or that's your instruction anyway. And how does this follow what she does?
So Genesis is actually a ceramicist, but her background is in sort of the way that objects are photographed for like a magazine spread or things like that. And so she sort of knows all these tips and tricks for how we make an object give off a certain feeling. And so her prompt is really about taking an object and sort of setting the scene so that it becomes part of a feeling. And it's a really fun exercise. Like, how can you make a banana look sad without sort of giving it eyes or a mouth or anything? But how might you position a banana on a tabletop with given light and make it look happy? and that's another thing where once you try this exercise and then you start to look at the advertising around you, you see the way that the people behind those ads are sort of playing with your emotions.
Well, and it's interesting, too, that your direction here is fun. You say that don't force an eggplant to be happy if it looks jaded instead.
This is from there's a tips, tricks, and variations section for every assignment. And those were often the most fun to do. And that's really where it's been great to make my video series, The Art Assignment, that presented not all of the assignments in the book, but some of them. Because when people responded to them, I really learned a lot from the way that other people responded and the way I responded. So the book contains a lot more, actually, than the videos, because I was able to incorporate the knowledge gleaned from so many people doing them.
Ah, yes, of course. You can only go in real time with video and audio like we're doing right now.
Right.
Let's take another phone call. Anne and Ashland, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sarah Urist Green.
Hi, I'm glad to be on the show. Thanks. I'm an artist, and there's something that's been intriguing me about the unintentionality of when there's graffiti sprayed on a wall and it's time to cover it up. People will, you know, take a roller and paint, and they'll try to match the wall, and they usually don't very well. And so you have the wall color and you have the paint color, and then you have this wonderful shape that's so unintentional as its own shape. And then there'll be more graffiti, and then they'll cover it up with yet another bland wall color, and then you have these three colors. And that's something that if you try to do it, can you ever achieve that subtle, wonderful, randomish set of shapes?
Oh, that's a great question. Thanks for bringing this to our attention, Anne.
Yeah, that's really beautiful. I love that. I always appreciate those moments, even though they're completely, as she says, unintentional, a variety of the wrong gray covering graffiti. Yeah, and I think, you know, clearly this caller was an artist because she's awake to those things and looking around and sort of remembers it. And I think that's wonderful. And there are a lot of prompts in the book that sort of ask you to think about that. Like, I'm thinking about one called Body in Place, offered by Maria Gaspar. And the picture that is included in the book is one where she works herself into a mural that's near where she lives. So she stands in front of it and wears particular clothes and poses with it and has herself photographed in front of it. And the assignment is to choose a location that is visible to you but seemingly invisible to others. Think about the location and what it represents and use your body to intervene.
Huh. So much about using brain and body and just differences in perspective and sound as well as visuals to create art in the book You Are an Artist, Assignments to Spark Creation, which grew out of Sarah Urist Green's work on The Art Assignment, the video series. Sarah, thanks so much for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thank you for having me.
It's been a pleasure. That will do it for today's exchange. We're online at jeffexchange.org. Our producers are John Baxter and Angela Decker of JPR News. Our student assistant, Randy Babbitt, is at the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please continue to stay safe and do what you can to keep yourself from not getting sick. Join us next time on the Jefferson Exchange and have a great day.